The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionix, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Hello, welcome to the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dan. We'll have the latest news from Roy Martin and David Lloyd's Radio Moments, of course, later. But we're delighted to welcome as our main feature this week, sound woman and podcaster extraordinaire, Helen Zaltzman. Helen's one of the beneficiaries of the Kickstarter campaign to fund Radiotopia, the online channel for non-broadcast audio production that's the brainchild of Roman Mars. We asked Helen to tell us more.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionix.
I'm Helen Zaltzman, and I've been making the comedy podcast Answer Me This in my living room in Crystal Palace for the past 8 years. But 2014 has been the best year podcasting's ever had, I think. Apple says that 7 billion podcasts have been listened to this year. The hitherto biggest podcast in the world, This American Life, left its radio home and became an independent podcasting outfit. And then it was outstripped by its first spin-off, Serial, which received unprecedented attention for a podcast. In fact, for the past 3 months, virtually every room I've walked into and any page I've browsed on the internet has contained people talking about Serial. The other exciting podcasting event of this autumn was that the medium proved that it is capable of raising some serious money. And it stems from Roman Mars, who makes the design and architecture podcast 99% Invisible from his shed in Berkeley, California. Back in October 2012, Roman used the crowdfunding website Kickstarter to see if his listeners would be willing to fork out $42,000 to keep his show going for another year. And really to justify the amount of time he was spending on it, rather than being with his wife and children. His listeners voted emphatically with their money, giving him more than $170,000. And the following year, more than twice that. Rather than keep all that money for himself like a sensible person, Roman decided to share the wealth amongst other podcasters.
So I've always wanted to run a punk rock record label. And so this was my way of doing that. I could help fund a lot of these shows. These people I really admire. And I thought I could, if I surrounded myself with them, I would feel cooler. Like, I would like it. And they were really talented. And I just thought that that would be fun. And so it was like a little indie punk rock record label that we could create through podcasts, a collective of programs where we were digital first. We focused on the podcast audience, and we sort of embodied the values and the things we liked about public radio, but we did a digital version of it. And that was the creation of Radiotopia. And so I think it's a mistake to overstate the selflessness of this act. Like, I get a lot of reward for Radiotopia. I get a lot of credit for it that I maybe don't deserve completely. To be involved with this is hugely rewarding. It makes me feel amazing. And to help people out makes me feel amazing. And when they're really talented, you know, like the reflected glow of that is like, I totally am a vampire for that.
Roman's third Kickstarter campaign this autumn became Kickstarter's biggest journalism project ever, raising over $620,000 for the Radiotopia Network. But since you can listen to podcasts whether you pay for them or not, what does make people volunteer their money?
We seem to have this really tight connection with our audience. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they choose us and we're in their head via their ears, and it's an intimate connection. And so when you say to people, you could become a part of this and support us and make it possible, I've just found that they just do it. They just kind of like to be a part of something cool and interesting. And you have to make the campaign work where they know that they're needed, they're joining this joyful experience, and that we're going to do something cool together. And they're really happy to join. I think I was most amazed by the common reaction from people being, thank you for giving me the opportunity to give you money, which I never thought that would ever happen. You know, like, that was really weird to me.
It is weird.
But I got it. And I think that that's the same thing, like, going back to the punk rock thing. I got joy from buying the 7-inch record of the opening band. Like, that gave me pleasure. And so I get where that pleasure comes from for supporting the show. That's exactly the same thing. Like, supporting an independent artist is a great feeling. And it's fun to be a part of it.
So the secret to success is suggesting to people there'll be some kind of emotional reward and altruistic satisfaction rather than saying pay me to do a thing that I want to
do. Yeah, I think it's less transactional. I'm glad that I'm not charging for an individual program and you pay a buck to get it and download it. I don't want it to be transactional. I want you to give what you can. It's a true community in that sense that everyone just pitches in with whatever they can to create the public media that they deserve.
And once people have paid, how do you get them to pay more?
Stretch goals became more about fixing the things that I found were broken within the public radio system. I mean, most of us are independents. We don't have a lot of stability. And the audience was like, we don't think that that's right. We're going to take care of you. And then during the Radiotopia campaign, we were, you know, I was fretting about the makeup of our roster and that we were mostly men and mostly white men. And so when the first Stretch Goal came about, I was just like, well, there's a lot of good shows out there and good producers out in the world. And we want to make sure that we get as many of them on the air with lots of diverse backgrounds and, you know, gender. And people took that on as like, they were like, yeah, totally. And they gave more money. People who pledged once, you know, would pledge a buck and they'd increase it to five just to make that happen. And these are our people, you know, they believe in the same values that we have. And when you speak to them in that way, that we're going to try to do something right, we're going to, like, the whole campaign is going to be about doing the right things that radio is often bad at, then they responded to that really, really well. We just get more voices, we get more interesting programming, and hopefully we create the new shows that are like real hits and really speak to people in a new way. And I'm so excited about that. I mean, it was been the thing I've always wanted.
And lucky me, I'm one of the beneficiaries of this. One of the stretch goals of the campaign was that I would be commissioned to make a new podcast, The Illusionist, if funding exceeded $400,000. Since they pranced past that milestone with no trouble, as of January 2015, I will, after 8 years of podcasting, finally be able to call myself a full-time podcaster. And whoever thought that would be a proper job? My mum is still on the fence, frankly. But is being funded largely by voluntary contributions from listeners only possible for a handful of big podcasts like Roman's? Or is it viable on a wider scale?
I think it's possible. I don't think that we've reached a saturation point. And I think that, as evidenced by the fact that my most popular web pages on my site are the pages where I list the other podcasts I listen to, is that once you get into listening to podcasts, you want more and more and more of them. So I don't think there is a real scarcity of attention or money yet. I do think there's a theoretical ceiling, but so far we haven't hit it.
Why do you think the radio industry needs you to come along and prove that it can be done in this very different way?
They might feel like they don't need it at all. You know, the fact that this is a viable pathway to create good work and have it be supported, it was really important for me to prove that. And what I hope that radio stations take from this, and, you know, production houses and distributors, is that this is a good path for creative work. It's really good for testing out work, that you don't necessarily have to commit millions of dollars to its creation and create a whole staff and huge production to put out a weekly program. And I also hope that it means that more individual and interesting voices make it to the air, and they trust people to create more individual and unique and genuine productions.
A timely observation, I think, from Roman Mars, ending that report from Helen Zaltzman. If you recognised part of it, that's because it was an extended version of a piece which was included in Five Lives' review of the Radio Year 2014, which incidentally is still available on the iPlayer. I like to think of it as Five Live at length. News now. Here's Roy.
UTV Radio has confirmed it is currently assessing the options for its UK independent local radio stations, which may or may not lead to the disposal of some or all of the stations. Rumours suggest that UKRD or Communicorp UK may be lined up to buy. And there's more trouble for community radio this week, as one station takes a break, another closes down completely, and a third station gives its licence back before it's even started. Meanwhile, the government's consultation on the future of community radio funding, which finished 9 months ago, is still yet to be published. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Thank you, Roy. After this from our sponsor, it'll be David Lloyd time.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
100 years of radio. Radio Moments.
We start thinking back to this week 26 years ago at the death of Radio 2's Ray Moore.
Very, very lovely indeed. Oh, it is nasty, doling out the goodies with sugar tongs and long white elbow gloves this morning. Willy Boskovsky in the Monte Carlo National Opera. And the thing knocked off one foggy night by Val Teufel and called Bella Bocca. And I'd lay even money and none the wiser now. A note from the school library service in Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire to get me to do Jenny Roberts, who's 22 today. Many happy returns.
What a voice. And that was his last show too. Farewell, Ray Moore, this week in 89. This week, 12 years ago, a new breakfast show for Yorkshire.
Ah, dear me. Good morning, it's 6.02, number one for Dance and R&B. This is Galaxy 105. Good morning from Hirsty. This is brand new to Galaxy 105. This is your new breakfast show. This is Hirsty's Daily Dose. I'm Hirsty. Hi, she's JoJo.
I'm still here, guys. Still here, only just.
We've dusted her down and given her a shaking back and she's flying now.
Smell the freshness.
The arrival of Hirsty's Daily Dose on Yorkshire's Galaxy 105 this week in 2003. And since then, there's been a lot of water under a lot of bridges. Good luck, Stephanie, in your first year as you. Who's this, then, starting a breakfast show 5 years ago?
And thanks to Sarah for her show. Now it's our go. That, of course, includes you at breakfast.
The Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Good morning, friends, and thanks for tuning in to the 11th of January 2010, a big day because representing England, Geoff Ross from Clacton-on-Sea and his lovely wife Janet are celebrating their 47th wedding anniversary. Representing Scotland, Suzanne and Ali Murray from Edinburgh are bidding on their first...
The start of Chris Evans on Radio 2 Breakfast with Moira Stewart this week in 2010. 91 years ago, the first play commissioned for radio was aired. It was called A Comedy of Danger. The production was set in the darkness of a coal mine where listeners and characters alike were at the same disadvantage because both could see nothing.
We shall suffocate or starve or both, my dear, in each other's arms.
Oh, Jack.
Even death shall not part us.
Oh, Jack, don't. It's too awful.
Our poor young lives cut so short.
Oh, don't. Don't.
There'll be articles in all the newspapers.
The first ever play written for radio this week in 1924. Head of programmes back then was Val Gielgud.
The development of the radio play in the long run depends upon three things. Intelligent listening, informed criticism, and good writing for the microphone. Too many authors who've hawked plays round for years seem to say to themselves, oh well, it's no go. Let's bung it along to Savoy Hill. And they do. I wonder if they ever realise that a play written with a real eye to the medium of the microphone is so rare that its appearance is hailed almost with shouts of joy.
I love the emphasis they placed on listeners back then, the responsibility to bloody well listen properly. Meanwhile, this week, 7 years ago, the digital radio station One Word closed after 8 years.
OK, John, well, maybe it's time to have the first reading from the Rule of Claw and let our listeners in on what we've been talking about.
OK, this is a passage where the boys have started to take control.
The books, drama and comedy service was replaced by Birdsong. New beginnings this week 42 years ago as commercial radio's first transmitters were turned on, getting ready for the launch later that year.
You're listening to an experimental transmission being made by the Independent Broadcasting Authority. We're transmitting on a frequency of 557 kHz, 539 metres in the medium wave band. And these special tests are to help us plan independent local radio stations for London.
The firing up of the new commercial radio AM transmitters this week in 1973. One presenter who later appeared on them has a birthday this week. is 82.
I like that. It's by Exile. It's called Try It On. Why not? You get a lot of slap faces, but a lot of fun.
Happy 82nd birthday to former Capital Mid-Morning Show presenter Michael Aspel. And you can't quite imagine him doing the same thing now, can you, on Capital.
Yeah, the most frightening thing about starting at Capital Radio was that I'd never had to do any self-op before. Never had to work the machinery. Always sat behind a glass and waved a languid finger at the BBC and someone else put on the records, put on the tapes, switched on the microphones and everything else. And I had to learn to do that.
As last year ended, we marked what would have been Kenny Everett's 70th birthday.
A chap called Michael Aspel is going to grace your wireless waves. He's coming soon to Capital to make you housewives rave. Ah! He's got a voice that's smooth as honey.
One of Kenny's influences died this week in 78. Trumpeter, band leader, and early production-heavy DJ, Jack Jackson.
At home, I have a photograph of a young man with red hair, and the inscription underneath reads, I am genuinely sorry to be leaving you, but I'll come back. And oh boy, what a comeback. So today I feel very proud to be able to welcome to our little program my friend Danny Kaye.
Well, thank you very much, Jack. And
Jack Jackson, who was to influence both Edmonds and Everett, he died this week 37 years ago. 1991 now, and this year saw a new national BBC service launched urgently on Radio 4's FM transmitters. It was to cover the first Gulf War.
Well, that was Jonathan Burchell in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. Let's go to another part of Saudi Arabia, to Dhahran, where our defence correspondent Mark Leite is now on the line. Mark, what news do you have from us, for us from Dhahran?
Well, we're still waiting.
The sound of Jenny Abramsky's Scud FM, as it was called informally, named after Saddam Hussein's Russian weapons. The station lasted until the 2nd of March on FM, whilst Radio 4 proper continued on longwave. The BBC chart gig has always been a big one, and this week, 33 years ago, Tommy Vance took over from Tony Blackburn and discovered charts are more difficult than they sound.
It's a modern romance, but what he was doing when they all went aye, 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 I've no idea. I think it's a secret.
Number 37.
Well, number 37 is Buona Sera. But just before that, let me tell you that Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie has gone from 35 down to 38. And now here is Bad Manners.
So with Alan Dell taking over Pick of the Pops this week 59 years ago.
May we bring you, and to your attention, if you've not already heard it, this record by Gale Warning and the Weathermen.
The death of BBC Local Radio's Dennis McCarthy 19 years ago.
You're in tune with BBC Radio Nottingham.
Listen with Mother's first airing 65 years ago.
Are you sitting quite comfortably? Then I'll begin.
The first Brain of Britain on Radio 4 47 years ago.
Which is the only British bird of the genus Troglo? Oh, I really do have to run at these awful words.
And the first edition of The Listener this week 86 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thank you, David Lloyd, Roy Martin, and especially this week, Helen Zaltzman. The Radio Today programme is a TDC production, and there'll be something online entirely similar next week. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx.